From your world news headquarters on the World Wide Web, it's time for your daily dose of sanity. This is the Maria Heller Show. Maria Heller is a published author, founder of the Universal Wheel, a lifestyle and philosophy based on our interconnectedness to all living things, a Reiki master, and delivers the news with spiritual views. How many intuitive news decoders, animal rights activists, and vegetarian broadcasters are there? Just one. Maria. Maria has provided independent news for a smart audience for over 13 years now on the Maria Heller Show, available at maria.net.
M-E-R-I-A.net.
And now, here is your host, the mouth that roars, Maria Heller.
Good morning, world. Maria here, alive and kicking. Welcome to Roaring Truth with my excellent co-host, Professor Jim Fetzer. If you're not familiar with Jim's work, where have you been? Get over to veteranstoday.com. Jim is a prolific investigator and writer and a person who really stands for truth, no matter how many barbs he has to take. So good morning, Jim.
Good morning, Maria. Real pleasure to be here with you today, and we got so much to discuss.
I know. It's like we plan a show, and then the world goes crazy the day before. And I'm like, well, I guess we have to address the big issues that are out there right now. And one, of course, the biggest one is the release of this torture report and the UN calling for heads to roll in the Bush administration, of all people. So we'll have to see if the UN carries any weight at all, because we'll never see justice any other way here.
I think that's most commendable, for the United Nations to be standing up for human rights, especially when they're violated by the world's most powerful, at least heretofore, economic and military entity, although there are signs that we are falling apart economically and that we're spent militarily. But the fact is that the publication of this report really is quite a revelation, and there are a number of political aspects to it that we'll want to consider. But I think on the face of it, first consideration, it's an important thing to do for a country that espouses principles of justice and truth by exposing your own malfeasance to the eyes of the world.
Exactly. Well, but a lot of people, right away they said, oh, this is going to create more terrorism in our country. They went on, high alert, get all our bases ready in case we have a blowback. But if you remember when you and I were talking about this as it was happening, that's one of the main things we talked about is, number one, we have no moral standing in the world. And number two, we can expect tremendous blowback. Not just as a result of the torture, Jim, but Bush's two illegal wars.
Oh, you're absolutely right. Absolutely right. And, of course, I wish I could say that Obama's doing a whole lot better, but we know that he's sent armed forces into at least 17 different countries in Africa alone, Maria. And, of course, he has sought to withdraw our troops from Iraq. That was his greatest accomplishment. Now he's sending them back in. I noticed that we had a ceremony closing American military action in Afghanistan. How long is that going to endure? Obama seems to me to have proven to be virtually as much a warmonger as Bush and Cheney.
Absolutely. Well, they never would have selected him for the role if not.
What's troubling me now, Maria, is about the politics here. Dianne Feinstein, whom I used to admire greatly, of course, was a key player in its release. John McCain, who has been described as being the father of ISIS in Iraq and Syria, of course, was endorsing it. McCain has a very checkered history. He appears to have betrayed the United States when he was in captivity in North Vietnam. There's a lot of stories about that, but I'm more troubled about the fact that he has actually visited the Middle East and met with leaders of ISIS, which he clearly supports. ISIS is being advised by two retired U.S. generals. We had a recent airdrop of food, weapons, and supplies for ISIS from American aircraft. In relation to Syria, it appears to be not seeking to defend ISIS, but rather attacking the infrastructure of Syria, bridges, oil refineries, grain silos. In other words, attempting to weaken Assad, not defeat ISIS. And in fact, Victoria Nuland, who's an assistant secretary of state for the Middle East, has made precisely such an explanation of why we are there. We're not there to defeat ISIS. We are there to undermine Assad.
Right, right. Well, you know, this week Israel lobbed a few bombs into Syria as well, and Syria's petitioned the UN on that.
That's so, a good point. And I am more troubled, too, by the fact that both McCain and Feinstein have been staunch supporters of Israel. They are very much Zionist flag bearers. And what concerns me the most is the following, Maria. Dick Cheney has denounced the release of this report. He said that it's going to bring about, you know, reactions, blowback. But in the past, he's also predicted there'd be another even bigger than 9/11 attack on the United States. It looks as though Chicago is the designated target. And my concern, apprehension at this point in time, is that the release of this report is going to be used to be explain why now ISIS, it will be alleged, has attacked us in Chicago. This is the general scenario that troubles me when I look at the various players and the various elements of the puzzle that were being presented.
Well, the other thing I looked at when I saw that is as the police are cracking down on these protesters throughout the country, all of a sudden I'm sure they're going to start saying there are terrorists amongst them and use it to squash the police brutality in justice system protesters.
I know, and the whole thing with the police response is outrageous. But where the district attorneys appear to be playing a key role, for example, in Ferguson, an assistant district attorney presented the grand jury with a statement of law that had been ruled constitutional perhaps before she was even born, that said that an officer could use lethal force to stop someone from escaping, which is such an obvious, blatant violation of due process. It's unbelievable that happened.
Right, right.
And where in New York, Maria, it appears that the, you know, the fact that the chokehold was applied by this officer long after Eric Garner had been subdued. I mean, this was a murder taking place right before our very eyes. I'm outraged that there was no indictment brought in either case, and there were multiple alternatives. I think in the case of...
Hello? Uh-oh. Hold on, folks. Okay, as usual, whenever I'm on with Jim, we get cut off and weird shit happens with the phone. It's only you that happens with, Jim.
Yeah, well,
somebody must really hate the two of us talking together.
Unbelievable.
Jim, I just want to correct you. You said that law about cops using deadly weapon if a suspect is fleeing, you had said it was constitutional. I know you meant it was ruled unconstitutional. Actually, the law came out in 1979, and it was ruled unconstitutional in 1985.
Yes, absolutely. Of course I meant unconstitutional. Thanks for catching that.
That's okay.
Which, of course, would explain by itself why the jurors, the grand jurors in the case of Ferguson would have been perplexed and believed that this was a lawful action on the part of the officer, when in fact we have multiple witnesses that he was 125 feet away, turned and raised his hand. I listened to three of them describe the situation on Lawrence O'Donnell's show on television. They were both all three completely convincing. And, you know, the man was shot like six times. It's unreal. Twice in the head, once when it appears he was already lying on the ground.
Absolutely. I mean, I put up a film yesterday that nobody bothered to show of two eyewitnesses on the spot saying his hands were in the air. Why are they still shooting him? He was like a dead man walking and they were still shooting him. I guess they blew his brains out, too, which is something we didn't hear. And, you know, when you look at it, let's face it, cops are showing nationwide that they have immunity and impunity. And they are, as David Icke said on my show yesterday, legitimate psychopaths with no human empathy, no human feelings. You know, they handcuffing little girls, 6 years old, you know, tasering little girls, 8 years old, throwing teenagers to the floor and beating them here in Phoenix. I mean, they are totally out of control, without question. But before we get into the cop stuff, I want to go back to the torture report. That report cost the American taxpayers $40 million and 5 years for them to present the redacted part that they did show us. Sort of reminds me of how long they dragged ass investigating 911 and how little money was spent on that.
Oh, yeah, I know. It was an appalling budget. Only on the order of like $400,000. And Bush Cheney with, you know, stonewalled for 441 days. It was only because of the political pressure from the Jersey girls. Four wives of victims of 9/11 made it politically unpalatable. And then, of course, when they finally agreed to testify before the commission, they said it would not be under oath, that no transcript would be taken, and that they would appear together so that W would have Dick Cheney there to cover for him. I mean, this is the action of a mafia don, Maria, not that president, vice president of the United States.
Absolutely. And this torture report, besides the $40 million, just to bring it through and investigate it, how about the $81 million they paid to two unknown, unequipped, private psychiatrists to come up with the torture program?
Well, it's shocking. And of course, some of these abuses are so incredibly grotesque. I mean, even the confining of the individual to the coffin-like structure, that would probably drive me bananas right there all by itself. I mean, it's outrageous what they were doing.
I know. People with broken feet, broken ankles, forcing them to stand for days in a row, you know, forcing some of them to stand for 17 days in a row. But the one that I couldn't even understand, because I know about force-feeding at Gitmo, I know that they've been force-feeding Americans in prison since the women try to get the right to vote. And, you know, everybody should see the movie Iron Jawed Angels to see that they took white American women who were looking to get the vote back in the day, incarcerated them, and force-fed them, amongst other tortures. So this is nothing new. But when I saw that they did, and I didn't even know it was possible, Jim, rectal feeding, I was like, what in the hell is that? That sounds so much like something the Nazis would do.
It does. I think it's very much on a par. Of course, it's, you know, inserting nutrients through the rectum, which will be absorbed by the large intestine and thereby keep the individual alive. But it's grotesque. I mean, you know, this is something you might do with a comatose a patient where there were limited options as to how you could keep them alive, where all kinds of questions, of course, arise circumstantially as to exactly the situation for a particular individual. But here it's obviously grossly abusive. And what do they think, Maria? They had to know this whole 9/11 thing was a fabrication. Therefore, what they were doing was torturing to extract false confessions, because it's well known that under torture, victims will testify or assert anything that their tormentors want them to say in order to avoid further pain.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, when you look at it, imagine being the guy that had to do those things. Okay? The person performing the rectal feeding, okay? Do you think any of these people are going to be mentally sane when they re-enter the civilian population?
It's really sick, Maria. It's really sick and a disgrace for the United States. I mean, the blowback is going to be horror and, you know, incredulity that any American government would ever allow such atrocities to be perpetrated on inmates under their own custody.
But you also know that, you know, that's just, I'm sure, a small example of what already goes on inside our prison system here in the United States.
Tom Hartman had some interesting reflections on this, comparing the decision of George Washington on how to treat the British prisoners when the Brits were incarcerating and allowing to starve to death thousands of Americans aboard their ships, where Washington made the determination that the prisoners should be treated with respect and to be given no cause to complain about their treatment, where the word spread rapidly, and in fact many of the British soldiers deserted and surrendered because they knew they weren't going to be subjected to the kind of abuse that their own officers were imposing upon those whom they captured from the American side.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, some of what I'm seeing, and I don't remember if it was a Cheney quote or whatever, as they're trying to justify this, is they were trying to get information on bin Laden.
Ridiculous, too. And, you know, I mean, this is, bin Laden actually died on 15 December 2001, which they had to know. It was announced in local newspapers and obituaries. He was buried in an unmarked grave in Afghanistan. It was even announced or reported in by Fox News, no less, on 26 December 2001. Maria, you can do a search right now for Fox News, 26 December 2001, bin Laden reported dead. David Ray Griffin, nominally regarded as a far more reliable source, has published a whole book about it entitled Osama Bin Laden Dead or Alive. Nicholas Kohlerstrom, who's a marvelous guy, a historian of science, he is the leading expert on 7-7, published Terror on the Tube, now in its third edition, published an article about him entitled Osama Bin Laden 1947 to 2001, And when the whole business, the whole fabricated event of the raid on the compound took place in order to get Obama's birth certificate off of the front page, in order to quell complaints that he hadn't closed Guantanamo or that his troops were stationed in Pakistan, claimed that the tip had come from Guantanamo, which of course was false, used troops already stationed in Pakistan, which may well be true, but Osama bin Laden, you know, had died 10 years before, so the whole thing was a complete fraud. It did succeed in getting his birth certificate off of the front page.
Right, and people don't realize, you know, that it was Rumsfeld, I believe, where the law was passed where it would be A-OK for the news to deliver propaganda to the United States public, where before it was illegal, then Rumsfeld kind of made it legal. And that's all people get is wag the dog.
Well, you're absolutely right. I published, by the way, about the raid on the compound when the film Zero Dark Thirty came out. It's entitled Zero Dark Thirty, The Deeper, Darker Truths, which I encourage everyone to read if they haven't run across it before. But your point is impeccable. According to the Smith-Mundt Act, which was passed in 1947, the CIA was precluded from using techniques of disinformation and propaganda on the American people. Rumsfeld weakened that, as you observe, and in more recent NDAA Appropriations Act has been weakened even further. In fact, I'd say at this point in time, it's been eviscerated, and there's no longer any way to keep the mass media from propagandizing the American people, reporting directly whatever the CIA wants them to report. I'm sorry to say, it's going on unabated, Maria.
Right. Well, let me ask you this, because people are questioning and wondering. They're saying that the CIA's defense is they were following orders. The UN is saying this has to go through the whole administration and all the way up to the people that approved it. Do you think that Dick Cheney and George Bush and Donald Rumsfeld and Condoleezza Rice and all the rest of them are going to pay for what they did?
Well, it's a very remote prospect, Maria, but the truth be known, that's terribly, terribly important. I mean, the very idea even of pardoning those who were responsible, including the very parties you're mentioning, would be a way of making it a fact that they were culpable for these actions. And even if there were no punishment that would be inflicted upon them, it would help to clear the air and stifle the conservative commentators who keep insisting they were doing the right thing when it was a gross violation of international law. The whole business was, of course, based on the fabricated events of 9/11, which were brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons, and the Department of Defense, and the Mossad, where it was arranged to induce America to become involved in wars in the Middle East on behalf of Israel. The whole idea was to take out the secular governments of various Mid-Eastern countries so that the religious factions that, you know, simmered just beneath the surface, but which weren't allowed to become manifest in the era of, for example, Saddam Hussein, would become open and repeated and violent and fragment those states into little statelets along religious and sectarian lines that would no longer pose a counterbalance to Israel's domination of the Middle East. That is what 9/11 was all about.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, to me, the rest of the world, I mean, they must be having quite the laugh at the United States. We have no right anymore ever to say anything to any country on earth about how they're treating their people, not just because of the torture report, but because of what the world is seeing in America today, you know, with the Black Lives Matter protests. And, of course, it's not just black people. You know, it's white people, too, Hispanics, dogs, cats. I mean, imagine how the world views us. And I don't see how we can ever get our moral standing back unless those people are prosecuted. If we don't show the world we're willing to do that, we become the laugh of the century.
I think you make an excellent point, and that pardons are a halfway measure. In this instance, if it's a practical impossibility to prosecute them, I believe the halfway measure would be better than no measure at all, but I certainly endorse your belief that the only way to really set the things right would be for us to prosecute our own leaders. I mean, there was a Nuremberg tribunal to prosecute the leaders of Nazi Germany. We need a comparable 9/11 tribunal to prosecute those who brought us the fabricated events of 9/11, given all the consequences that they entail.
Right. Look at our country, let alone the world today, as a result of the lies that they told us and sold us on 9/11. You know, it's interesting because I saw Bush the Idiot King interviewed after Eric Gardner was choked to death in New York, and he said that he couldn't understand how an indictment didn't happen. Yet, look at George Bush and the horrors that he has brought upon the United States and the world, and who is he to talk? It was the first thing I thought of, especially with this torture report, which I'm sure went way beyond the chokehold.
Oh, I think you're absolutely right. And, I mean, but, you know, the media was so dominated by the government at the time of 9/11, they even suppressed the report of the major newspapers on the fraud, the stolen election in Florida that brought Bush into office for the sake of national unity in a time of crisis. Mm-hmm. So that, you know, these events have been manipulated to benefit the political agenda of this extreme right wing. I mentioned in passing, by the way, Maria, for any of those who, you know, have any lingering doubts about whether what we were told about 9/11 was fabricated or faked, I have a new article entitled the 9/11 Update, More Proof No Boeing 757 Hit the Pentagon, where an aeronautical engineer has explained the principles of aerodynamics that would have made the official trajectory of a Boeing 757 approaching the Pentagon at over 500 miles an hour and barely skimming the ground aerodynamically impossible because of what is known as a downdraft. I have sometimes referred to it as ground effect, but this is a far more thorough, detailed, and painstaking explanation of why such an aircraft at that speed would not have been able to get closer to the ground than 60 or even 80 feet, which is higher than the Pentagon is tall, which is, you know, proof where laws of aerodynamics, like laws of physics and chemistry and biology, cannot be violated and cannot be changed. The government not only gave us a scenario of the Pentagon attack that is false and provably false, it's not even aerodynamically possible.
Well, nothing that happened that day fit into the natural laws of science. Zero that day. But I'm looking through the article, and I had read it. And I think, you know, unless I'm wrong, that you said there was 94 cameras or something like that at the Pentagon. And yet
we
have...
I think 84 was the right number, but it may have been the higher. My impression was 84. But it was stunning, you know.
Right.
The FBI was out immediately, instantly collecting the footage from cases of where where they would have had reports. It would have been easily visible as to what had actually happened, and then, of course, what actually they finally released only five frames from the all the videos they had, and only one of them actually showed the image of an aircraft, and it turned out to be much too small to be a Boeing 757, so that even the government's own data refutes the government's own account. You don't even have to go as far as looking at the laws of aerodynamics, but it's fascinating that the laws of aerodynamics completely contradict what we were told.
Exactly. Well, it was like the free fall that happened at Ground Zero, and I just want to know, I just went through the article to find the number, because it's important for people to remember this, okay? It says, since there were 96 outwardly aimed CCTV cameras ringing the Pentagon... It's entirely reasonable to assume there must exist at least one clear frame of this world-changing event. Pentagon officials claim all 96 cameras mysteriously malfunctioned simultaneously just prior to the incident, and so as a result, no photographs are available. Now, how are we supposed to believe that story?
Yeah, I know. Right. Yes, it's in the epilogue to the article 9/11 update. More proof: no Boeing 757 hit the Pentagon.
96.
That's a good one for everyone to check out.
96. It kind of reminds me of the cameras in the tunnel where Princess Diana was slaughtered.
Yeah,
not working either. How convenient.
Yeah.
You know, how convenient. Now here you go with this Obama. Now, I mean, these stories to me are so interrelated, all of them. Obama now, you know, I don't know how many more millions of dollars wasted to put cameras on cops. But cops shut their cameras off as one just got fired because his third strike, he's out, where he said his camera malfunctioned while he was beating an American citizen. So to me, cameras are not the answer. I mean, we had a full video of Eric Garner's murder, and he still didn't get an indictment. So what's the difference if they got a camera or not? The thing is, they need to not have guns.
Well, I do think that it is a giant step forward to have video proof of these transactions, what takes place. So I think the Eric Garner case was particularly stunning because the video record was so complete and so compelling that this very large man, I mean, he weighed over 350 pounds, was taken down for no good reason, and that this one officer, you know, was applying a chokehold from beginning to end.
Mm-hmm.
Chokeholds had been forbidden in by the New York Police Department in 1996, as I recall, Maria, and,
right.
And here he was applying a chokehold. And then even after he was completely subdued and four or five officers were holding him down, he didn't release a chokehold. That, to me, represented a transition to what I would argue was even a second-degree murder.
I agree. And like everything else, they just let him lay on the floor before they even bother thinking of calling, you know, an ambulance or anybody for help, like they did with that little boy in Cleveland. You know, they let him lay on the ground for 4 minutes. You know, you look at Michael Brown. They left his body in the street for 4.5 hours. Okay, I mean, what kind of country is this now?
Maria, we have decayed into some form of fascist military state, and it's being reinforced by the Pentagon providing all of this surplus military equipment to these local police departments, because once they get this heavy equipment, they are eager to use it. A lot of our local military are being trained in Israel and being taught to treat, you know, crowds as the enemy, not as, you know, on a friendly basis,
mm-hmm.
and resorting to harsh measures such as those Israelis so commonly practice on Palestinians and any others who stand in their way. It's disgusting here in the United States because it means that police forces, which normally function as the interface between the population and the administration of law, are no longer, as it were, user-friendly. They now tend to adopt an attitude of hostility, and coming out in mass with, a lot of this heavy equipment, it has been shown to be a precipitating factor for a more angry protest by demonstrators than a police simply show up in their squad cars and in their regular uniforms. The kind of violent outrage that has been present here tends not to occur. But, in Ferguson, Maria, that we had reports that SWAT teams were setting fire to the buildings.
Yeah.
And that there's an even earlier report that the entire area had been slated for renovation, reconstruction, demolition of the buildings 2 years before as a form of urban renewal. So it looks as though they picked this area very carefully to set a stage where they could burn buildings and undertake other events that were going to be highly provocative and make it look as though the crowds were responsible when it was the police who were provoking them.
Well, I mean, every article you read says that it's most of the time it's the police presence that provokes the crowd because they show up in military gear. And once they have these militarized weapons, they develop that military mindset like they're in a war. Listen, how many years have I said it, Jim? 9/11 happened and we all got convicted.
That's right. That's right. And now we're suffering. We're enduring the consequences. And I only hope that we're not going to have more in the form of another contrived, even more explosive version of 9/11, because when Dick Cheney predicts something like this is going to happen, he's been in the driver's seat for these events before. He appears to have been the principal executioner of 9/11. Mm-hmm. So he knows what he's talking about, and if they're having if the release of this terror report is going to provide a smokescreen of cover to blame it on ISIS, for example, then I say with high probability that's what we can expect to occur in the very near future.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's Christmas, so why not use Christmas or New Year's Eve like they like to roll things out on us on New Year's Eve or the holidays when nobody's paying attention, like the Patriot Act or the NDAA? And why not, ooh, look, now we repeat, we put out that terror report and now we got hit again,
Yeah.
It's just a crazy, crazy world, and I know to a lot of people who want to keep their head in the sand, you and I probably sound like two insane people, but you know what? We're two people that have lived in this country a whole long time and done the homework for a whole long time.
Yeah, the difference between us and most Americans is that most Americans don't have the time to do any research. They accept the news they hear in sound bites from radio and television, take it for granted. They never even get on the internet to take a look at the facts, figure out the real evidence, which is what you and I specialize in doing.
Right.
So we're attempting to perform a service on behalf of the American people by letting them know what's actually going on as opposed to what they're being told, which is considerably different and in some cases staggeringly exaggerated and false.
Well, I think that the statistics are proving that Americans, more and more Americans, are walking away from the mass media, not believing anything they hear on television news. And that's a good beginning.
That is a good thing, Maria, a very good thing.
I think, listen, we can all smell bullshit a mile away. Some people just have a weaker nose than others. It takes them a little longer. Jim, we're going to take a short break. When we get back, I want to discuss something I saw in Rolling Stone. So stay with us. Jim and I will be right back.
Wow. One solid hour of commercial-free information thanks to you. The person who wants truth has the integrity and understanding to support it with your donation and subscription. Maria believes people can handle the truth and delivers it tirelessly with those with ears to listen. 14 years on the net. Won't you take a moment right now to commit to a subscription of your choice at www.maria.net. That's MERIA.net. Over 1,100 hours of pure education all in one place, 24/7 and all downloadable. Knowledge is power. Sharing that knowledge is wisdom. Together we can change the world and create real hope. Now let's get back to the Maria Heller Show.
Okay, welcome back to Roaring Truth, and as usual, Jim and I are roaring away. Jim, I don't know if you got to see the article. Matt Taibbi, I think that's how he pronounces his last name, T-A-I-B-B-I, wrote in Rolling Stone of the police losing their legitimacy.
And oh, Matt T-I-A-B-B-I, yeah, he's a really, really good reporter. He's usually right on the mark and typically ahead of the curve. He gets stories right 99% of the time. But that police are losing their legitimacy, I think that's exactly right. I mean, why would you believe if you're going to get strangled for doing nothing on a public street in Staten Island, for God's sake, or if you're going to be shot to death because you're crossing the road in Ferguson, Illinois? I mean, okay, there was some altercation between the police officer and this fellow who was shot in the squad car, but he was 125 feet away. I mean, this is just outrageous. I mean, talk about abuse of position and disproportionate response, Maria.
Oh, yeah. They're out of control. They're out of control. I mean, who doesn't get paranoid even more so now when you see a cop car following you? And imagine, and I mean, I feel that way as a woman, a white woman. Imagine what a black person feels with a cop car behind them. No, some woman, I forget what state it was in, some woman was driving on the highway, the cop cut her off, she honked to the cop for cutting her off, and he shot her in the head.
Oh, God.
I mean, these stories are every day. Tasering a little 8-year-old girl, Jim, if that was my daughter or granddaughter, no, I would pity the fool. There is no law that would stop me from wanting to get back.
Yeah, those traffic cases, they're stopping them for DWB, driving while black.
How about climbing the staircase while you're black? That guy in New York, they shot in the staircase because it was a rookie cop with a, you know, trigger finger on itchy. And just killed a guy for entering a stairwell because the cops in New York actually patrol hallways of apartment buildings. I mean, what the hell?
One good thing that seems to be emerging from all this is widespread public discussion about what's taking place here, the role of police, and even the militarization of our police forces. I think that discussion is all to the good.
Well,
Obama
yeah.
has made some verbal gestures that are promising, but, you know, unless he follows through, nothing will come of them.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, when you, that article in Rolling Stone about cops losing their legitimacy, because I can honestly tell you, if a cop doesn't follow the law, why the hell should I care what he intends to enforce on me? If they're
yeah.
lawbreakers, who's going to respect them? And in the
yeah.
article, Matt says that, you know, as they continue to lose their legitimacy, all hell is going to break loose. He says, what we're seeing now is nothing compared to when the, you know, let's face it, when the 1%ers lose their protectors, there's going to be hell to pay. You know, you and I have been saying this for 20 years, Jim. When the sleeping giant that is America finally wakes up, there's going to be hell to pay. And it surely looks like Americans are waking up. And I, one thing I've always said, especially on 9/11, when we're supposed to believe over-medicated, over-angry, over-psychotic Americans are on airplanes and two little guys with knives or paper cutters stop them without the Americans beating the crap out of them because we're all on our last nerve and too many people on Prozac.
And Maria, I say it's not just the police force. I say the district attorneys play a major role here.
Yeah, the whole court system sucks.
It does, and you know, here's another case illustrative out of New York City where this young man who invented a way to apply sterile dental floss to your teeth took it to Johnson & Johnson. They did it by his invention, which would have been the thing to do, but unbeknownst to him, they spent hundreds of thousands of dollars and decades trying to develop the delivery of sterile dental floss, which they've been falsely advertising they were providing for nearly 100 years.
Right.
They appear to have taken it easier and more convenient for them to take him out, and there was an attempt to murder him by his dentist, Diana Deedon. This fellow survived only because he was on a weird vegan diet and drank a huge fruit smoothie, but she applied some caustic combination of toxic chemicals, of fluoride-benzene combination, where he very intelligently saved his urine thereafter and had it studied by labs. And would you believe lab after lab was unable to detect it? Finally, they figured out it was some custom blend of fluoride and benzene, perfect for committing assassinations because it's undetectable by the normal screening processes. They dragged him out on a claim that he had been harassing his dentist when he repeatedly asked her for information about what she had infused his mouth with on the occasion of claiming she was filling a cavity, which she refused to provide. She issued a false report to the police that was dismissed, and then a second when they took it to trial after 22 false starts, Maria, this is the most outrageous case I've ever encountered. They excluded all of the witnesses, all the evidence, all the lab reports that he'd accumulated, and the judge made the ruling that whether the plaintiff had attempted to assassinate the defendant in this case would be no part of it, which meant it gutted his whole case, because even the letter he had sent to colleagues and persons who resided near her soliciting information included reports from a dozen experts already. Mm-hmm. But the jury was a group of young men, six young men between the ages of 26 and 36, and the prosecutor manipulated them masterfully. He implied that Sean Dixon made this all up, that he was an anti-fluoride extremist, and that he was trying to infuse his life, which was otherwise meaningless, with some kind of significance. This is as outrageous a case as I've ever seen, Maria. He had more proof of an attempted murder than has ever been documented in the history of criminal justice in the United States. And the police in New York City would not even accept a criminal complaint. I encourage everyone to track down the article, Murder in Slow Motion, New York City DA in Court Facilitate Killing Sean Dix, and the earlier article, What Passes for Justice in New York Today, the case of Sean Dix.
I have those links, and I'll certainly include them, you know, in today's archive. But this is the other problem, as you say, the entire justice system. Let's face it, there is no justice in this country. Some young man, I think he's 22 years old, he stole 3 pairs of sunglasses and they gave him 10 years in jail.
Ridiculous.
Okay, in the day in New York when I used to hang out with the boys, they used to have a couple of sayings. One was, if you can't do the time, don't do the crime. And the other one was that, you know, you should have equal time for the equal crime. But you don't have that in America. Some kid's going to jail for 10 years for 3 pairs of sunglasses. Kevin Trudeau is rotting in jail for 10 years for a book he wrote. You know, we have all these bankers, you know, all these big-time criminals in politics, cops getting away with murder. There is no justice in this country. So the whole justice system is under a microscope. This isn't just about the police being out of control.
You're absolutely right, Maria. And in fact, it was illustrated in the Sean Dix case where he was taken into custody immediately for a nonviolent crime. And he was, sent to the tombs. He is on he has a fragile body because it's been ravaged by the effects of that fluoride benzene compound. Mm-hmm. He cannot drink normal water because the amount of fluoride in New York water would kill him all by itself. Mm-hmm. So he goes out of his way to accumulate apples and oranges by trading with other inmates and so forth. The police raided his cell, took all his apples and oranges and pitched them. They just tossed them out. This case is so outrageous, Maria, that I hope anyone reading the article will consider either calling to the New York mayor's office to complain to free Sean Dix. The number there is 212 New York. And, you know, just call and complain. I also give you the access to the district attorney's office. There's a form you can submit. But this is a gross betrayal of the American principles of justice. I mean, can you imagine being denied the right to present evidence in your own defense when you're being prosecuted for a crime that you did not commit?
Of course. Well, I couldn't imagine that they allowed Darren Wilson. God, it's hard to keep track of these names after a while because there's so many cases. But Darren Wilson, the cop that shot Michael Brown, how in the hell was he allowed to speak for 4.5 hours to a grand jury?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. I mean, anybody that's gone through the system, and I have, not only do you not have a right to present your case to the grand jury, your attorney is not allowed to hear what goes on in the grand jury. And yet this guy gets to yap in there for 4.5 hours.
And as they say, the prosecutor with a grand jury could indict a ham sandwich. And it's just outrageous how it's being abused here again and again and again.
Well, that's because you and I have said it for a long time. There's two sets of laws in this country, one for us and one for them. Look at that kid that got off a year ago today when he mowed down 3 people in his car because he suffered from affluenza and they only gave him probation because he was rich and his parents didn't teach him better.
Grotesque.
And a few months later, his father got busted, and he didn't go to jail either. He also suffers affluenza. So how long before the average person in the street starts a war against these people? I mean, come on. I grew up in Brooklyn. It would take a whole lot less than this. There would be a gang war in the streets like nobody's business.
Yes, yes, yes. You sure got that right.
And I'm just sitting here watching the world go by like that song. I'm just sitting here watching the world go round and round. And to me, it's like, holy crap, this is just like living through the 60s all over again. Look what they're doing to the students protesting at Berkeley. It's Kent State all over again. We just never seem to learn.
And Maria, recent development, I mentioned this fellow, Nick Kohlerstrom, he has been doing research on the use of anti-infestants, delousing technology at the end of World War II in German labor camps, and has discovered evidence that the Nazis were not gassing the inmates, that in fact, had they been doing so, that the walls of the gas chambers would have turned blue, and the bodies that were so affected by cyanide would have turned pink, but there's no report of any pink bodies there from any of the camps, and the walls of the alleged gas chambers are not blue, but get this, the walls of the delousing chambers where the chemical Zyklon B was using to get rid of lice to combat dysentery and other infections did turn blue. So he has scientific evidence that 2 of the 3 tenets that define the classic Holocaust narrative about the use of Zyklon B in gas chambers to murder staggering numbers of inmates are false, and it turns out that the number 6 million is theological in origin, Maria. It doesn't have an historical basis in that term. You know, reports about 6 million Jews were in trouble were being published as early as 1890.
Right.
So I have published a review of his book, which you can find online, entitled The Holocaust Narrative, Politics, Trump Science. My opinion, Maria, is with a story like this, which has had such immense political ramifications, where it's used as an excuse for, you know, the Israelis to demand whatever they want by playing on a Western sense of guilt for having allowed 6 million to be killed. This is so important that it requires investigation. After all, if it was real, then serious investigation will confirm it. And if it was not, then the world is entitled to know. The evidence all supports the conclusion that it was a myth, a form of deception that was being concocted to conceal the Allies' responsibility for the deaths in those labor camps. Because when, in the course of bombing German cities, which was taking place unabated again and again and again, they were also interdicting the railroad lines that had been used to resupply the camps with food. When the railroad lines were interdicted, it was no longer possible. But there's no evidence to support the conclusion that there was a deliberate policy of the Third Reich to exterminate inmates. After all, they actually were labor camps, and you can't get any work out of a dead inmate.
Right. Well, it's been proven time and again that there weren't even a total of 6 million Jews in all of Europe at that time. But, you know, they have to use this as their excuse. And, you know, who's going to investigate it where we have laws, you know, hate laws about the Holy Holocaust? Nobody gives a shit how many millions of Russians or Chinese died in World War II. They don't worry about the concentration camps we had here for the Germans that we treated like dirt. arresting our own people, Japanese Americans. But everything is all about the Holy Holocaust, you know. And I remember talking to Howard Zinn about the Holocaust. And, you know, Howard was a Jew. You know, he's a Jew from New York. And I said to him, but Howard, what about the silent Holocaust? And he was like, what do you mean? And I said, the silent Holocaust that's been happening on Gaza, you know, the Palestinians. Yeah. Nobody talks about that. That's not a holy Holocaust.
Yeah.
You know, so the Jews need to stop hiding behind that bull crap because, you know what, the longer I live, the more I realize every single thing we were taught in school was a lie. Every bit of it.
It's absolutely shocking and embarrassing, but everything we were told about JFK, everything we were told about 9/11, what we were told about the plane crash that killed Paul Wellstone, what we've been told about Sandy Hook and the Boston bombing, these are all fabricated events. They were all concealed and misrepresented to the American people to you know, keep the actual political agenda that was at work. Revealed to the public.
I have to agree. You know, and I mean, since history, since everything we were taught, and I know for a lot of people that's really hard to accept. You know, because it really blows a hole in your whole reality. You know, when you actually have to say, "Oh my God, everything I thought was real was a lie." So you know, what is real? I mean, that's probably the next question: what is real? But people need to wake up because, you know, the American experiment is starting to really look like not only a total failure, but unsalvageable.
I agree completely. There are occasional signs of light. I was, for example, interviewed on my way to this JFK conference in Arlington, Texas, that had been organized by Judith Berry Baker. Lee Oswald was buried in Arlington. Judith had a long relationship with him in New Orleans before he came up to Dallas and was framed for the assassination. But I was interviewed on the way by a 50,000-watt radio station, CBS affiliate out of Minneapolis, St. Paul, and you can find the interview online under former UMD professor to speak at JFK assassination conference. And you want to know one of the most fascinating aspects of this, Maria, is that in the article that he wrote about it, he referred to me as a leading conspiracy analyst.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, I have the article in front of me. This is another link I'll put in so everybody can read it. Well, you know, listen, people used to call us, it's not a conspiracy theory if it's real, okay? And how many people get convicted in jail and go to jail because of a conspiracy to commit, all right? They always use those words in a court. They're real in court, but they're never real when you and I talk about it.
Maria, the most commonly prosecuted crime in the United States is conspiracy to commit X. That's exactly right. Conspiracies are as American as apple pie.
Right.
Most American conspiracies are economic, but, you know, some are political. I mean, after all, what would Shakespeare have had to write about were it not for plots against the kings and queens of England?
That's true. And, you know, I've done probably at least six, maybe more, shows with Dave McGowan on the conspiracy to kill Abraham Lincoln, okay? So when you look at the work he's done on the lies we were told about Lincoln's assassination, you know, it's very easy to understand Kennedy's assassination and all the assassinations since.
So, you're absolutely right.
Let's talk about it.
Once you understand how to do research on these things, the scales fall from your eyes and you begin to see more clearly the true history of the United States.
Right.
And its effects upon the world, which have not been good.
Listen, I say it a lot, Jim. I say it, you know, every election season. I say it over and over again. Our founding fathers didn't say we had a choice to participate or be informed. It said it was your duty to be an informed citizen. Your duty, okay? So everybody out there that doesn't want to do the work, doesn't want to know, is really not being a good citizen. That's the way I see that.
And, you know, Maria, I mean, it extends right up to this day. We have new revelations about Sandy Hook. My most recent is entitled Sandy Hook, the bomb that didn't smoke, lounging at the massacre. we've taken a closer look at the celebrated Shannon Hook's iconic photograph of the string of children being presumably being led to safety by a policewoman. We had known from a second photograph that Shannon Hicks has acknowledged having taken that there were a series of parents there with their arms folding, watching as this took place, and where the policewoman was even rearranging the children in line in order to get a better shot. Mm-hmm. And now it turns out that in the background, there are a couple of parents who are actually lounging. One of them even looks as though she's sitting in a chair, but it's very obvious she's taking, witnessing something that is not an emergency situation. Mm-hmm. On 14 December 2012, when the shooting allegedly took place, the temperature was 28 degrees Fahrenheit and there was frost on the ground. You search these photographs for frost or any signs of the right. exhalation of breath in that cold temperature, it ain't there. And get this, we've also discovered a video that shows something missing from the Sandy Hook Elementary School parking lot that's present in every other parking lot you're familiar with, namely oil stains. Mm. There were no oil stains there, Maria, because nobody was using the lot because the school had been abandoned by 2008.
Well, but that's all more wood for the fire, Jim. Jim, we're out of time. I want to thank you so much for joining me and for being so prolific. You and I never run out of material, that's for sure.
It's my great pleasure, Maria. It's my great pleasure. I'm just delighted to be here with you each time we do our show.
Well, let's hope the next time I talk to you will be next year. Let's hope the world's still here and in place.
So to be wished.
All right, take care. Take care, Jim.
Bye.
Bye. Jim Fetzer, check out his work at veteranstoday.com. Tomorrow I'll be back with the news, and as usual, plenty of it. Share the information you learn here. Wake your fellow neighbor up before we're all put to sleep permanently. Again, thank you for supporting the show, and I'll see you guys tomorrow.
Thank you for listening and supporting the Maria Show. Tell others what you learned today. Knowledge becomes wisdom only when it's shared. Encourage others to subscribe today. www.maria.net. Often imitated, never duplicated. A world of information all in one place. www.maria.net. Always ahead of the curve. Always on your side. Get active or get radioactive. Subscribe today.